Penguin Random House Audio presents Man's Fourth Best Hospital by Samuel Shem. Read for you by Sean Renette. To Janet and Katie. In memory of John Updike. With thanks to Rosemary Ahern, Tracy Bernstein, Clifton Metter, Christina Robb, Steve Shafrow, and Mark Vonnegut. We came here to serve God, and also to get rich. Bernal Diaz del Castillo, Historia Verdadera de la Conquista de la Nueva España, 1632. Part 1. Costa Rica. I'm not rich because I tell the truth. Graffiti on Dumpster, New York City, 2018. 1. Except for her eyes, Barry is fully clothed. Her eyes show her relief at my close call with death several hours ago. Over our decades together, but for the slightest flicker of a butterfly's wing, we wouldn't be here. None of us would. We all rise or fall on that flicker. But for a flicker, I'd now be a divorced alcoholic neurosurgeon on the best medical school faculty. Her relief, yes, and concern, and love. A love that all those years ago survived the medical internship that I, Roy Bash, novelized as The House of God. That crucial year, learning to be a doctor, was horrific. But we interns, Chuck, Eat My Dust Eddie, The Runt, Hyper, Hooper, and I, lucked out. We had the fat man as our teaching resident. Brilliant, funny, earthly, insatiable, always amid the illusions of the hospital, being real. More than that, being with us. If you go through a death-defying experience with a guy like Fats, he's never not with you, just past the edges of your sight. Now, late this June afternoon, Barry and I are on the large back patio of Tierra Tranquila, quiet earth. Our little finca in Guanacaste, Costa Rica, 3 degrees above the equator. Battered and in some pain, I'm sitting on my lucky red metal folding chair, she beside me, wishing that our daughter Spring could be here. Barry has texted her. No reply yet. It's the start of the rainy season, a cooling downpour once in the afternoon, once at night, when the drumming of drops on the corrugated tin roof is a comfort. We never sleep past 5:30, awakened by the portent of dawn, awakening the birds, awakening the day, doves first, cooing. At 6 or so, toucans fly in to feast on the bunch of platanos cuadratos I've cut with my cool machete and hung from a close-by mango tree. Other large birds follow, bluebirds so big they seem on steroids, and paired-for-life motmots, whose two tufted tail feathers are as long as the rest of their bodies, and finally, the flocks of small parrots and tanagers. Now the motmots are gone. Last year, high up in the cloud forest near the Arenal volcano, we saw motmots. Here, it's gotten too hot. The planet is starting to boil. Soon there'll be flamingos in the Arctic, but no Arctic. No refuge anywhere. The sick world is in our rooms, doctors and patients alike. We're 2,000 feet up the mountain, no mosquitoes. The patio overlooks fruit trees, bananas, plantanos, papayas, grapefruits, oranges, sweet lemons, tons of mangoes, everything you could want. We look past the strangler fig and coconut palm to the stream and little waterfall. We can drink the water. Imagine, and then to the rainforest, dark as Conrad's jungle, climbing to the peak. A family of howler monkeys is coming closer. They move from fig tree to fig tree their whole lives, never touching the ground except when they die and fall. Their calls sound like the roars of lions, but they're the size of house cats. On the other side of the mountain, we see the Pacific, 2 hours away on pocked dirt roads. We bought this small finca 10 years ago, when America started the Mid-Asian War and broke the back of the Middle East. Costa Rica abolished its army in 1948, uses the money for crazy things like free health care, education, clean energy. Surrounded by farms, the nearest little town is down a scary 13-hairpin turn dirt road. No phone, no internet, no nothing except land and sky and whether it will rain today or not. Given our lives in a fractured America, we don't spend enough time here. A peaceful place, this. The national greeting? You ask, ¿Cómo está? How are you? And the response is pura vida, pure life. I can spend a whole day on and off watching a new banana leaf appear, rolled in a tight spiral at dawn, opening to a full leaf by dusk. The sun shining through the slick new leaf is a green to die for, which this morning I almost did. Every time we come here after a long absence, we go with Miguel, the caretaker, who looks 40 but is 73, to walk the property, climbing up the mountain to the highest point, a panorama north across the Bay of Nicoya toward the spine of volcanoes. This morning, because of the rain, mud, and overgrowth, instead of climbing up, we drove the jeep up the road and began to walk back down. Barry and me, Miguel and Maurizio, a young ranch hand who speaks English. Going down a steep stretch of the cliff, I stepped on a round rock and my right ankle bent over and I started to fall, and reflexively I put down my left foot on what should have been solid, but it, too, hit a round rock, and I again tried to put down my right, but I was moving fast, kind of running fast, almost vertically down, and then flying through the air head first down, no time to put my hands out in front of me, sailed for what seemed an eternity and landed on my face and things went black. I found myself face down amidst rocks, hands behind my back. As I raised my head, I saw blurrily a stove-sized boulder a few inches in front of my face. Dimly I heard Barry and the others shouting, climbing down to me. I tried to assess, with a doctor's mind, consciousness, wiggle of toes, eyesight, all but for my glasses that had flown away, seemed intact. I felt something wet on the left side of my face, viscous and sticky, and wiped it away, bright red, arterial. Blood came across my left eye. I reached to stop it. But then hands were lifting me to sit up, and Barry was staring at my face in horror. I searched with a hand, both my palms scraped bloody in a pocket for a clean tissue, and blotted my face and held it tight on my left eye. They put on my glasses, unbroken, and I was staring at the stove-sized boulder 2 inches from me, realizing that if I had gone headfirst into it, I'd be dead. At that, I started to shake in shock. I was able to walk with their help up to the jeep. We sped down the 13-hairpin turns to the village of Carmona and the small clinic. Then something else happened. A hit of happiness, a kind of house of God joy. I was lying on the examining table in the modern well-lit room for emergencies, Barry on one side and Maurizio on the other. I'd seen my face in a mirror. A large flap of skin from above my left eye was hanging down. After the nurse had taken my vitals, in came the doctor. And what a doctor. Standing over me, she smiled just about the warmest smile I'd ever seen from a doctor. And she was gorgeous. Black hair pulled back in a ponytail, brown eyes surrounded by makeup, long lashes, eyeliner, a Modigliani face. And as I said, that smile. She began in Spanish, and I, who even after immersion classes spoke like a 2-year-old, said, "Non habla español," and Maurizio began translating. It was clear she was a good doc, all the right questions, and except for my maybe brief loss of consciousness, she got all the no answers to rule out bad shit. When she bent over to examine me, I could not help noticing that her purple blouse was, to use a line from The House, unbuttoned down past Thursday, breasts cradled in the lace palms of a pink bra. All at once, amidst this medical crisis that...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?